You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcasting from WHYY. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Jeff Mack, Newmark Knight Frank, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Ethan Mill, Rod Goto, Lou Beardale, Morgan Lewis, Patrick Riley, Bartlett Group, Paul Pomeroy, BNC Creative. And Jeffrey, can you give us a rundown on who the guests are today?
Sure, Herb. And I'd like to first thank Bill Morazzo for hosting us here today at WHYY. We have Kevin Burns, Executive Director of Action Wellness, Ken Wong, President of CIG Asia, Dan Tropiano is the CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware, and with Dan today is Adeline Tropiano, Dan's mother. Special guest, we have also Bill McLaughlin, President McLaughlin & Morgan.
All right, let's get to know our first guest, Kevin Burns, Executive Director of Action Wellness. Kevin, what is Action Wellness? What are you guys doing?
Action Wellness is formerly Action AIDS. We changed our name about a year ago, and we're a social service agency that provides a range of services for people with HIV disease and other chronic illnesses.
How large or how small is the organization?
So we have 6 offices in the region and 110 full-time staff.
And this is a nonprofit. And where are you from originally?
Originally from Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother and one older sister.
So you're the youngest of 3.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how young were you when you realized that you might have a special calling?
It was probably in adolescence when I sort of came out to myself or started to identify as a gay person. And I think on some level I confused being gay as a vocation to be a religious brother in the Catholic Church.
Really? Mary Pat, you want to take it from here?
Mm-hmm. Kevin, we were talking in the green room, and you had mentioned the Catholic Church was such a tremendous influence on your youth and development, and yet there's a little bit of a contradiction, or your lifestyle and the church's view on that. So, and then you entered the seminary. If you could elaborate a little bit and how you feel about the church these days.
Sure. So I entered the seminary out of high school with the intention of becoming a religious brother. So I entered it into a religious community. And I think it was in that process that I really sort of came more to terms with who I was as a gay man. But at the same time, the church was not very accepting or supporting of gay people, so it was a conflict. And ultimately, I feel like the church left me, that I really didn't leave the community I was with, but that the church sort of pushed me away because of being a gay man.
You have to have a lot of courage. I guess the word is courage, stepping up like you've done in terms of your feelings regarding the church and coming out.
It was very scary.
I'm wondering if that strength, that courage, had anything to do with your ability to build this organization, Action Wellness.
You know, it's interesting because I think I had a number of jobs before I went to work at Action AIDS, Action Wellness, but I think at Action Wellness I really found a community of people. There were obviously other gay people working there, but also a real community of people who were progressive and who were really dedicated.
When you joined the organization, what size was it and what size is it now?
So I originally started as a volunteer buddy, and there were probably about 70 or 80 buddies at that time. It was mostly a volunteer organization, and then I was hired as a staff person 2 years after that.
How many years ago is this?
28 years ago.
Is it fair to say that you've built this organization to 110 full-time people?
I would say that our community has built the organization.
All right,
we've
so
done
I understand
it as a team.
You're not taking credit for it yourself, but it sounds to me like you've got a lot of courage and conviction in terms of building this community that showed up early in your life with your coming out as well as with the seminary. Is that fair?
Yeah, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the next question here?
Kevin, where did you first start to see that element of community? You were talking earlier about your parents and the importance that they played.
Yeah, both of my parents were very connected. They both volunteered at the church that we belonged to. They were sort of the go-to people in each of their families, that their siblings would come to for advice or for help or for support. So I very much got that from my parents.
So watching them do that, I think you said that your dad was a really good listener and everybody would come to talk to him. Watching your dad and watching your mom, what effect did that have on you, and how does that show up in your community today?
I think that it observing them do that was something that I admired in their ability to do that, and I think I learned from them. I think they modeled for me what was important about how to be there for people, how to listen to people, and then help people to access what they need. So both of my parents had siblings mm-hmm. who were alcoholics, and I saw my parents really struggle with that and work with them to try to get them the help that they need, which
Jeffrey?
Is sort of what I do today.
Ken, we were talking about your extended family, and your aunt is, I think, the one that that needed help from your family. What did you observe as a young person growing up providing that kind of help that you use at Action Wellness?
Yeah, so I think just through her experience and seeing her be so devastated by addiction and alcohol, and my parents working to try to help her to overcome that, just sort of saw alcoholism as a disease from a very early age, saw, you know, how it can devastate families, and how it can also be an opportunity to bring families together to sort of support the person struggling with an addiction and help to move them toward recovery.
Lou?
My aunt was able to achieve recovery later in her life.
Lou?
Kevin, you said that your mother was a go-to person and your father was also a go-to person. How do you think that affected you and your ability to grow active wellness?
I think both of them, that's who I saw modeling that kind of behavior. So it was something that I think became part of my personality and part of who I was as a person. They were good role models, I guess is a good way to put it.
Kevin, again in the green room, we were talking about your, you know, growing up Catholic school. At what age did you really become mindful and aware of social justice? If you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I had an incredible nun as an eighth grade teacher who was very passionate about social justice and especially Catholic social justice. And I think she was really my inspiration around that. And actually, she, I still keep in touch with her all these years later. And she actually, when she stopped teaching, she became an HIV social worker. So we sort of share that. But she was definitely my inspiration.
Mr. Riley, do you have a question there?
And you mentioned in the green room that you have two siblings. How did they fit into your formative years and you developing into someone who wanted to help people?
Yeah, so my brother, my oldest brother, is 16 years older than my sisters, and then my sister and I are only 18 months apart. So my brother was really like an older cousin, he was sort of out of the house as my sister and I were growing up. My sister and I are very close. Not having children of my own, I'm very close to my brother's children as well as my sister's children. They are very inclusive.
Kevin?
Yep.
That's wonderful that you have that connection with your family. And just want to go back to the community. When you talked about the church and going into the seminary, I really heard a need for safety and a place where you could feel accepted. And it strikes me that you are giving that to people who are very sick or potentially could be sick. And just talk a little bit more about that. It just seems like a very important connection.
Sure, absolutely. And that's what Action Wellness is all about, is building a community where people can feel safe, where people can be themselves, where they can be accepted for who they are and celebrated for who they are. So that is and always has been very important to me. And I think it's also very important to the people I work with at Action Wellness.
That's a really important word, celebrated. Growing up not being able to celebrate who you were. So what does that mean to you every day to be able to celebrate the people in your community?
You know, it's really simple things. Like, for example, being able to work at a place where I can have a picture of my husband on my desk and other people can share what they've done over the weekend. It's really about being out and being authentic as a person and having that accepted and celebrated.
Do you feel like you're following a little bit in the footsteps of your mom, helping people? And can you give us an example of someone that you've really helped in their life?
On some level, I mean, the clients that I've worked with over the years, the staff that I've worked with, I very much see what we do as managers as being there to provide support to the staff. Most of the staff we have at Action Wellness are incredibly dedicated and passionate about what they're doing. And so our job as the management team is to make sure they don't burn out doing really difficult work. So those are both things I think I learned from both my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about your parents earlier in the green room, Kevin, that they were very accepting of you. There was a lot of love, and I feel the love coming from you. I think other people do in the room here. When you talk about the community and the people, your staff, that you love your way through a lot of things.
Yeah, that's nice. Thank you. I think it is about, how do you build that kind of energy with people? my parents were very accepting after initial sort of shock, and I was talking earlier with someone here in the room about that initial shock of coming out to your parents, and it is an adjustment, especially if, you know, for Catholic parents, it's mm-hmm. not what they would have hoped for their kids.
Kevin,
to come
what's
out
the website getting. Address? What's your website address?
ActionWellness.org.
We've been speaking with Kevin Burns, Executive Director of Action Wellness, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders back in a moment right after this break. And your name and organization is?
Denise Lance with Attentive Health.
And Denise, why did you start Attentive Health?
Well, back in my early 30s, I was going through a pretty major health care crisis of my own.
What kind of health care crisis? What are you talking about?
Obesity, a long list of health conditions, and a lot of medications.
So what'd you do about it?
Change diet and lifestyle in some pretty significant ways, but very shocking results.
What kind of shocking results?
It was a lot of weight loss, but I went off of pretty much all medications and basically eliminated all of the health conditions I had.
How'd you do that?
By changing my diet and
isn't that what you do for others nowadays?
Yep. So we work with people to help them do that.
And what's your website address?
AttentiveHealth.com.
Let me have that one more time.
AttentiveHealth.com.
And what do you do for people?
We help them get better.
Uh-huh. And give me the website address one last time.
AttentiveHealth.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Ethan Milrod.
And the name of the organization?
GoTo.
GoTo. Why is the name of the organization GoTo, and what do you do for your clients?
Well, we act as a single technology source for our clients, kind of like the go-to guys
uh-huh.
and girls.
And what kind of technologies do you help your clients with?
We provide our clients with the full range of technology solutions, anything that is voice, data, or video related.
Why would they need one source in order to do this stuff?
Well, we found that over time, clients have lots of so-called go-to vendors, but they're truly not go-to vendors. They're biased, they're subjective, and oftentimes business owners are pulling their hair out trying to bring technology together. They really need a company to bring it all together for them.
So because there's so many different competing kinds of technologies and conflicting technologies, and if you do this, you can't do that, you're telling me you'd like to come in as an unbiased source and try to give them a hand with that stuff.
We want to let business owners focus on their business and what's important to them and not have to worry about the technology. We'll bring that all together.
Are there times that you come in as a consultant, as a second opinion, rather than the guy that's actually selling them the stuff or integrating the stuff?
Always, always. We have to understand their business so we can apply technology, not just throw technology up against the wall to see what sticks.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't your job to make the most money where you want to sell them whatever you can make the most money on?
We're never thinking about what we're going to make the most money on. We're thinking about what's the best fit for the client. The money comes later on.
So you're concerned about the relationship with the client.
Exactly.
So I guess the other problem is, like, there's so many emerging technologies. You got to be on top of all these tech. Do you have any partners in the business?
I have two business partners. Yeah,
figures, because this is not something you could be able to do yourself. There's so many changing technologies. What's the website address of this organization?
It's GoToTech, that's G-O, the number 2, T-E-C-H.com.
Let me have that one more time.
GoToTech.com.
Excellent. And your name is?
Ethan Milrod.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Ken Wong, president of CIG Asia. Ken, what is CIG Asia? What are you guys doing?
CIG Asia is a property and casualty brokerage firm here in Center City, Philadelphia, and we operate on a regional and a national basis.
All right. And where are you from originally?
Originally, I was born and raised in Philadelphia.
And how many brothers and sisters?
Two sisters and a brother.
And where are you in the pecking order?
I'm the oldest.
Uh-huh. And you grew up, if I remember correctly, in Northeast Philadelphia, where you told us you were one of the only Asian-American families in that neighborhood. And what was it like growing up in that neighborhood when you were a kid?
It was a little tough at times when nobody else in the area looks like you. There was a lot of opportunities for me to get into fistfights.
Uh-huh. So you were the oldest of the four brothers and sisters. What did that do to you?
Well, as the oldest, the expectation was that I had to take care of my siblings, my younger siblings, and the family.
Uh-huh. Paul?
Ken, when you're the oldest, one of the things about learning how to take care of others is an innate thing, but you must have also learned that from some other people. Who was a good example for you growing up?
Well, one of the examples I had was a fellow that lived down the block from me. He was a few years older than me, but he befriended me when we were in the Boy Scouts together. And he was always sort of a role model and example of what I would try to aspire to be outside of the family.
How much older was he? What was his name?
He was about 4 years older. His name was John Scarupa.
And what did you learn from John Scarupa?
I learned that you can accept and trust other people that don't look like you, because he certainly accepted and trusted me, even though I was younger. That was a real important lesson for me to learn.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about your dad's. Where's your dad from?
My dad was from China, and he escaped China at a young age when he was, I think, in his 21 or 22 years old when the communists were closing the borders.
He escaped China, and didn't you tell us a story about a bus or something?
Yes, he escaped China and made his way to the West Coast and was able to get from the West Coast to Philadelphia on a Greyhound bus, even though he couldn't read or write or speak English.
How did he do that?
He did that by just keeping his eyes and ears open and being very observant about people's behavior around him, so he knew when to get off the bus to go to the bathroom and when to get back on the bus so he didn't miss
it. You weren't with him. How do you know that?
I asked him a few years ago, before he passed, why he came and how he was able to do all this, and he told me that he said he was, you know, fearful of missing the bus, so he made sure he was, you know, very observant of everything around him.
Why were you asking him those questions?
I asked him those questions because, you know, growing up, my father kept a lot of things inside of him, and you know, I just felt that there were some things I wanted to understand about him to help me understand a lot about myself.
What did you learn from him that you learned about yourself?
A lot of grit, but being able to be observant. Sometimes it's best not to say a whole lot, but to listen and watch.
How's that help you build a business? I don't understand. I thought that, you know, you've got to be a salesman. What's listening have to do with building a business?
The best salespeople are the best listeners.
How about from what you learned when you were a kid from your friend that you were Asian and he wasn't, and how's that help you build a business?
Well, I do business with a lot of non-Asians, and I have to, you know, get them some, you know, in the very beginning was getting them past the idea that, you know, I was Asian American and not somebody that looked like them, and get them to understand that they could trust me, but also that I understood what their needs were by listening to them.
Perfect. Jeffrey?
I thought it was so interesting, Ken, what you learned from your dad working together with his business. But, you know, on the flip side, what did your mom teach you that you use every day?
My mom was probably one of the toughest persons that I knew, and what I learned from her is that you have a lot of faith in your family, and you are just very resilient and work really hard.
Christine?
Ken, you didn't personally have to come over on a bus like your father did, but you told a story in the green room about your neighborhood and how you had to convince people that you weren't Japanese or Korean. I mean, you had to survive in your own way. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how that impacts you today?
Yeah, that is. I grew up in a period of time where a lot of the men in the households in the neighborhood were either Korean War veterans or World War II veterans, and being Asian, you know, I had to make sure they understood that we were Chinese Americans and not Japanese or Koreans. And just being able to articulate and speak to people and get them to understand my family's point of view.
Ken, also you mentioned that when you were 12 years old, your father was involved with, you had to help read contracts for your father so that he would understand what he was signing. And then earlier what we were talking about is, isn't that what you're doing with your clients nowadays?
Yes. When I was younger, because I'm the oldest and going to school and learning English and reading, my parents just assumed that a 12-year-old kid could read a leasing contract and a sales contract. And so I spent time sitting at tables with leasing agents and attorneys and salespeople reading contracts and then having to explain to my parents, you know, what this all meant so that they understood what they were signing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Lou, what kind of questions you got there?
Ken, in the early parts of your business, when you were first starting the business, you were talking about translating concepts that people didn't understand into ways to protect their business. Can you reflect on your childhood and how activities at that time helped?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I had the responsibility of making sure my family and my parents understood what was going on around them, so that they could, you know, they could run a business and live peacefully, you know, in the area. So it was a matter of translating to them, you know, the mainstream culture, and then be able to translate, you know, our Chinese culture and the things we did to the folks outside of the household, so they understood us.
Peter?
Yeah, Ken, the story of John and the lessons of trust that you told us about, I think, are so important to how you conduct your business and how people learn to trust. And from a non-American culture, talk a little bit more about that, why that's so important to the value of your business.
Well, a lot of my clientele are immigrants, first generation, who've never had a business and never actually ever dealt with the concept of insurance. So in our mainstream American society, business society, you have to have insurances for a number of different reasons. And trying to explain the concept of insurance, sometimes it's difficult enough to explain that concept to mainstream folks, let alone people where English is not their primary language.
Pat? Growing up, you said that you always aspired to be a pilot in the military. What was it that gave you that ambition?
I have a great respect for the military and for all the sacrifices that they make and their families make. And one of the things I wanted to do was to join the military and at some point in time be a pilot. Because of my poor eyesight, that whole concept never came to fruition.
Hank?
You mentioned earlier that you were sticking up for your brother and two sisters. How old were you when you were getting into those fights to protect them?
I would say from the time I started grade school, it was getting into a fight with somebody every day.
Was that the time in your life when you realized that one of your callings was to protect others?
It was something that I grew up with. I guess it's some of it had to do with the influence of my parents. As the oldest son, my responsibility was to protect the family.
But isn't that what insurance is all about? Protecting others.
It is.
Hank, it's an interesting connection you made there. What else are you thinking, Hank?
I'm just wondering, with what you've learned from your brothers and sisters, what do you take to work with you from brother or sister?
And is this a protecting thing really who you are?
I guess it is. I'm a big believer that I have a responsibility in both in my family and in my community to make make the pathway easier for the next generation of young people.
Wow.
from our community coming through. And in my business, my job is to make sure that when something happens, that people's businesses, their lives, their resources, their families are taken care of.
You're really
by having
built
the right
that
insurance.
Way. You're Ken. Really built to protect as well as to pave the way for the next generation. Ken, what's the website address for the organization?
CIG.com.
CIG.com. We've been speaking with Ken Wong, president of CIG Asia, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We will be back in a moment right after this break. Want to help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. And your name and your organization is...
Jana Jim with Doyle Alliance Group.
And Jana, what do you enjoy about your job with Doyle Alliance Group?
I enjoy that every day I'm solving complex problems for our trusted and beloved clients.
So your clients are different kinds of corporations and you're helping them with their employee benefits?
Correct.
And that's a pretty confusing area nowadays. There's lots of changes and there's lots of details, huh?
extremely confusing.
So you enjoy that. You enjoy getting involved. Every day is a little bit different with helping them solve their problems and answer their questions. And you also get involved with helping them talk with their employees?
Yes. Every day is unpredictable, and I never know whether it's an employee problem or employer problem that we're resolving.
So the confusion does and the ambiguity doesn't bother you. You like that stuff. What's the website address of this organization?
DoyleAllianceGroup.com.
Let me have that one more time.
DoyleAllianceGroup.com.
And your name again is?
Jana Jim.
From Doyle Alliance Group, this has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Peter Snelling.
And Peter, what organization are you with?
I work for Merrill Lynch, Division of Bank of America.
And your role at Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, what do you do there?
Well, our title is wealth management, but what we really do is help clients achieve and maintain their wealth so that they can draw income over their lifetimes.
So you're helping people manage their money so that it grows over the course of their lifetime as opposed to disappears, hopefully.
That's the idea.
And you've been doing this in many instances for families where you're managing sometimes the third generation of wealth. So not only did the grandparents like you and the parents like you, but the kids like you as well.
That's true.
So you've proven that you've been able to weather different ups and downs in the financial markets and cycles. Otherwise, these families would have left you. Am I wrong about that?
Well, our job actually is not to figure out what's going to happen next, because that can't be done. Our job is to make sure that it works no matter what happens next.
Well, that's interesting. And you've been doing this for how many years now?
32.
32 years. So you've certainly proven, regardless of the economic cycles, that you're able to keep clients and keep them happy. And you've got, I guess, the wide variety of products in terms of stocks and bonds and everything else under the sun because you're Merrill Lynch. So you've got the whole variety of colors you can play with. It's just a matter of which colors the client feels most appropriate.
Well, I think that's true, and most investment firms have all the tools. It's really what you do with the tools that matters, not what you have.
How can our clients, how can the listening audience get in touch with you and talk to you further?
My website is peter_snelling@ml.com.
Let me have that one more time.
peter_snelling@ml.com.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my guest, Dan Tropiano, who is the CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware, and his mom, Adeline Tropiano. And Dan, what is United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware? And give us some quick stats about it.
In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have about 4,000 employees, about 1,500 that I'm responsible for in my commercial area.
Wow. Overall, how large is the organization?
We serve about 1.2 million people throughout Pennsylvania.
Whoa. All right. And you're the CEO of this organization. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in northern New Jersey in a town called Clark.
Clark, New Jersey. And how many brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, but immediately next door lived two older cousins, which I would consider same as a brother and a sister.
So you had two cousins that lived next door, and the good thing is we've got your mom here. Adeline, what was he like as a kid? What was Dan like as a kid?
Dan, as a young boy, was very motivated. He had his thoughts together, and he implicated them
How did you see that? Give us an example of how you saw who he was back when he was a kid.
Well, if he had a thought or idea, he would do it. He wanted to sell newspapers. He contacted the journal and signed up and started it all on his own. Mm-hmm. Naturally, I observed from the sidelines, but he was capable of accomplishing on his own.
What was his? Didn't you tell us a neighbor made up a nickname for Dan? What was the neighbor's nickname for him?
I don't know if this is politically correct, yeah, but excuse me if it isn't. He used to call him the 36-year-old midget, and that really inspired me, because as a mother, I thought he was almost perfect. But when a neighbor makes a comment, you think, well, I'm on the right track.
When you say you were on the right track, what did that neighbor see in him? What was the neighbor seeing in him?
His ability to think beyond a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old.
And how did you see that in his? How did you see that in Dan? His ability to think beyond his age.
Dan was really my buddy, until he actually till he went off to college, mm-hmm. and I was able to communicate with him more as a young adult than a little child.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey,
you know, I have some isms in my family, and when Dan was talking to us last time he was on the show, he mentioned that you always said get up, show up, and shut up, and I think that taught Dan some things. Well, how did you get some of those? Where did you learn that?
Raising two boys, at least my generation, tended to hold back on showing a lot of love and affection. So it was get up, show up, dress up, and shut up. Not meaning that you can't express an opinion. It meant that you do your job, do it well, and don't complain.
Dan, what did that teach you?
I think the biggest thing it taught me was a work ethic, but also grit. I embodied that at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Dan, you're the CEO of a pretty significant organization. There's nothing more humbling than having your mother next to you, talking about you. How does it feel when she says she thought you were perfect as a kid? How does that feel when you hear her talk about you as a young person?
Well, I think that's a mother's view. I mean, I thought I was perfect too. and I think the comparison to some of my sibling, who was, I think, more of a challenge for her, made me look a little bit better.
Lou, what kind of questions do you have?
Adeline, you said Dan was always putting things together. Dan, how do you think that affected your business life?
Well, I think that carries through to today. If you read a lot of job descriptions, they say self-motivated starter. I think and believe that I truly am that. So, a big part of my job is taking innovations and bringing innovations to the market to compete, and then taking those innovations, though, and tailoring them to the local geography and local landscape.
Didn't your mother do some innovation with you as a kid with teaching you stuff or something with flashcards? Or what was that story about?
Yeah, so at a pretty young age, she would use flashcards to help me with math or spelling or whatever the task of the school day was. So I'll leave that to her.
So your mom's got this innovation in her blood that got passed on to you, huh?
Yeah, I would say so.
Uh-huh.
Jeffrey? In healthcare, you're providing safety and care for people, and your family growing up with your cousins next door, you always said you had a safety net. How did learning that have you be able to help your clients?
Well, I was the youngest of the four of us, and I always felt like I was protected. I always felt like I had a safety net. So I was always more willing to take risk. I think I was always more willing to not be afraid to fail, because I knew even with failure I had a backdrop or a safety net behind me regardless of what happened. So it allowed me freedom to take risk.
And Adeline, how did you provide safety for Dan?
I always taught my children, and even now to my grandchildren, they could always count on my husband and I being there. I think that when you go out into the world, even more so today, you have to know in the back of your mind you have some place that's safe for you, that'll always take you back no matter what and care for you.
And Dan, do you think that helped move you into this role as CEO of United Healthcare, this large organization?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way about the employees that work with me. And
what do you
mean? I always say to them, I go, don't be afraid to fail, right? Fail fast, fail smart, learn something from it, but don't be afraid to fail. Because success has to come with some level of risk. But if you're too scared, you can't take the chance. So it's a big part of what I preach to the team that works with me.
Who's got the right next question?
Just want to hear a little bit more about, there was a special relationship amongst the family living next door to the cousins. Adeline, your sister was married to, tell us a little bit about the family history there.
We were two sisters married to two brothers. This made the bloodline even stronger. And we kept together. We kept the family together, the children together. And even through all the negatives, positives, ups and downs, we know that we all belong together.
Hank?
Dan, was there any resentment that your cousins were kind of treated like your mom's children?
Not on my behalf. Again, I was the baby by 5 years, so I think they probably resented me because I was treated a little bit more special.
Family's critical. How do you communicate that today at United Healthcare? Family's critical.
Well, I do talk a lot with the team about two things that I think you get from family primarily, which is integrity and compassion. And we have five pillars of our culture, and it starts with integrity and compassion. So that's a big part of what we talk about and how we go about our business every day.
Mm-hmm. Edeline, Dan has got an amazing job. He's the CEO. He's got all these employees. I mean, he's the top guy. Are you surprised he turned out this way?
Yes. And let me explain why. To me, my children, my grandchildren, as long as they grow up to be responsible, hardworking citizens, that's enough for me. Anything beyond that, it just amazes me.
Mm-hmm. You proud of them?
Extremely, both my boys.
Why? Why are you proud of Dan?
Because, again, they're hardworking and responsible.
It's not because he's running this big company and helping a lot of people and making money and stuff like that?
Well, that impresses me. But the responsibility of an adult mm-hmm. to their family, to their children, that's the most important thing to me.
Mary Pat?
Adeline, we've heard so much of what Dan learned from you growing up. What have you learned from your son?
I learned that children can make you very proud, and that all the hard work and the ups and downs, they pay off. They really do, and especially through grandchildren.
What do you mean it pays off? Give us an example. What do you mean? Tell me more.
Well, I basically was a stay-at-home mom with a mom-and-pop business, and especially today at my age, I think what was my accomplishment. And now that I look back, I realize that raising two responsible boys who in turn are raising six responsible young adults, I think that was my accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit in the green room, Adeline, that you know nobody's perfect as a parent, and you hadn't bestowed as much affection raising boys, and that you're able to do that now with your grandchildren. That must mean the world to you that you can do that.
Yes, and I also have to explain that I feel the love that I show through to my grandchildren is almost making my sons realize the affection and love that I have for them. And mm-hmm. I think they now understand why I did what
Dan,
I did.
What's the website address for the United Healthcare?
UHC.com.
We've been speaking with Dan Tropiano and his mom, Adeline Tropiano, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We will be back in a moment right after this break. Your name and organization is?
Hi, I'm Chris Smith. I work for Health Mats. We're a company in Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
And what kind of stuff do you guys do?
We are a commercial mat company that rents mats to commercial properties.
Well, so your mats would be on the floors when you walk into a building of different kinds of buildings?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And how old is this firm?
48 years old.
And how long have you been with the firm?
I've been there a year and a half.
Uh-huh. What do you enjoy about your job?
It's a lot of fun. I write a lot of content about our industry and make people more familiar with our mats.
So what's so special about your mats?
We have a bunch of different types of mats. The mm-hmm. the most exciting thing is that we do larger size mats up to 6 by 20, which is a really large mat for an entryway. Most companies don't offer that.
So you really enjoy your job.
I do.
And you enjoy the people you work with?
I do. We're like a big family.
So, it's like a big family. What's the website address?
It's healthmats.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Nella Bloom.
And the name of the organization?
Women Owned Law.
And what is this organization, Women Owned Law? What makes this organization special?
It's a new professional association that's focused on women legal entrepreneurs. These are women who have launched or lead law firms and other legal services firms.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit more about where this idea came from.
Well, there is a lot of demand for an organization like this. There mm-hmm. was a soft launch in October, and after, and just by word of mouth, we're not only launching in Philadelphia, where the majority of the members now are, but also in New York and Washington, D.C.
Whose idea was this?
This was the idea of a few women lawyers, specifically Nicole Galli mm-hmm. and Gabrielle Soleil, mm-hmm. each of whom own their own practices.
Mm-hmm. And why would they form something like this?
There is a lot of demand for something like this.
Why would there be a lot of demand?
Because there are a lot of women who own their own law firms mm-hmm. and either are solo practitioners or have smaller practices mm-hmm. or have an ownership interest in a larger practice, but really are directing the goals of the practice overall.
So these women, this gives them a chance to hang out and talk with each other and compare notes?
Well, it is, but we also are going to be doing a lot of programming focusing not only on how to start a business, how to run a small business, and the issues that are specific to law firms, but also we want to be the go-to source for media, for academics and industry people who want to understand the growing sector of women-owned law firms.
What's the website address of this organization?
It is womenownedlaw.org.
Let me have that one more time.
Womenownedlaw.org.
And your name is?
Nella Bloom.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, are truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com to hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. Mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Bill McLaughlin, who's president of McLaughlin & Morgan. Bill, what is McLaughlin & Morgan? What are you guys doing?
We are helping Irish companies enter the U.S. and U.S. companies go to Ireland.
And weren't you involved in founding an organization or two in the Philadelphia area?
Yes, I founded the Irish American Business Chamber 18 years ago, and I also started a girls basketball league close to 25 years ago.
What's the similarity between starting that girls basketball league and building this organization, McLaughlin & Morgan? Was it a coaching thing that was going on with you with those girls?
Well, I have two daughters, and I wanted them to be able to play basketball. There was no league for them, so that was my motivation.
Hank, you have a question there?
Yes. When you take a look at the influence that your dad had on you, what was it like to grow up with a professional football player here in Philadelphia?
Well, me and my four sisters never got out of line, I can say that. Dad was very supportive of us all playing sports, and he was a very religious guy, so the Catholic Church for both he and my mother was
very
important.
So how did that shape you for the person you are today?
I wanted to do my best for them, but I really wanted to excel in sports, and I didn't.
Jeffrey?
That was a driver for me to continue.
Oh, well, the fact that you weren't good at sports, you learned that even though something could be difficult, you can still succeed, which I guess is something to do with building McLaughlin & Morgan, which is helping these companies cross borders. Sometimes it's not easy, but you know it could be done.
That's right. I constantly push myself in sports. I never reached the point where I was good enough to make a college team or high school team, but that pushed me along the way, and I continue to push.
Jeffrey?
McLaughlin and Morgan is a partnership, and what's good? What's important about a partnership, and what's special about your partner?
Well, when we started our company 30 years ago, my partner is my wife, Natalie Morgan McLaughlin. That's where the Morgan comes from. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to do the things that I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Bill, how did your Irish grandmother affect what you're doing today?
My grandmother came to America when she was 19 and lived with us till she died when I was 13 and had a great impact on me talking about Ireland.
What do you mean? Tell us more.
Well, she left a two-room farmhouse, came to America, worked as a cook, had to learn how to cook, though, to work as a cook, and was always a great supporter for our me and my sisters. So it was you could go to her with any problems and talk to her about it.
She further instilled your love of Ireland?
She did, no question about it. We would talk about what it was like for her, and and I always felt that I wanted to be part of helping Ireland.
You felt that? How young were you when you felt that?
I would say definitely in my early teens.
Wow. And look what you're doing for a living nowadays, Peter.
Bill, the maternal instinct that has been a part of your business, I want to follow on that, surrounded by fourth sisters as well. And now your wife is your partner, your yin and yang. Tell us a little bit more about how that's influenced and helped your business succeed.
We grew up in a very female-centric family, but my father, being the strong man that he was, he never let my mother be disrespected by any of us kids. And I think that had an influence on me in terms of what a man should do, but also I had four sisters who were older and younger than me, and we all shared the same things. I had to do the dishes, but they didn't have to the same nights, so we took turns. We worked together.
Mm-hmm. Pat?
Bill, you said when you were younger, your dad had a quote, the best gift you could give your children is to love your mother. What do you think he meant by that, and what kind of effect does that have on you today?
I think that my mother had the support and back of my father, and that allowed her to totally concentrate all her love on our family. And I think that's really the impact that it had. Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, if you all did the dishes together, I assume you sat and ate dinner together. What was that like? What was the dinner conversation like with all your sisters and your parents?
Mostly around school. We went to a Catholic school that was all the teachers were nuns, and so it revolved around school, family. Never politics unless family guests were there, aunts and uncles, and mm-hmm. then it switched. And we and my sisters would be listeners rather than participants.
Paul?
You made a point earlier that I thought was really interesting where you said you were talking about how you watch and learn from your dad about what a man should do, and yet you also talked about how you aspired to be great in sports, but it didn't quite develop. At what point did you make that pivot over to being this creator of these organizations in terms of that being at the core of where you saw ultimate success?
Well, you know, even though I wasn't good at sports, I loved it. I really loved it. And I liked the team part of sports a great deal. And I felt that I wanted my children, our two daughters and our son, to be involved with sports. So that's really had a lot to do with it.
All right, here's the next question.
You were talking about your grandmother. I think she had an influence on this business that you have. You could sit down with her and ask her anything about Ireland or her. Isn't that kind of what you do today with your clients?
She was a fascinating woman. So, as I said, she left when she was 19 years old, came here, worked as a cook, and raised her family. And between her and my mother talking about Ireland, it had an awful, had a large influence on me, including starting to read Irish literature, et cetera. But I felt that if I had the opportunity, I would help businesses in Ireland. And that opportunity came along when I started the Irish Chamber.
So have you helped businesses come here or businesses go there or do business cross-border? Can you give us an example?
Right now I'm working with a clinical lab in Ireland that wants to break into working with pharmaceutical companies here.
So you work with a lot of different industries, ultimately.
I'm also working with a food company that's trying to break into the U.S.
Oh, interesting. So you really are that vision you had as a kid where you wanted to help Ireland. You're really in the midst of doing that.
I am. I'm fortunate to be doing something that I love, and I'm fortunate to be able to do it for a living.
What is something you love? What are you talking about?
I love connecting people and making businesses happen. I've been able to trace lots of connections which turned out into profitable businesses for both companies.
You love connecting. How young were you when you started connecting people? What did that look like?
I was probably in college when that really started to take off.
Doing what? What was that? What did that look like?
Well, when I was at LaSalle, I went to school full time, but I also worked full time at a deaf school. I was making connections even then, getting people jobs there, et cetera.
What do you mean?
I lived as a house father in the Pennsylvania School for the Deaf, and I introduced the dean to other people at LaSalle to hire them as well.
So you were making connections when you were in college. That's your nature to go ahead and make connections. No wonder you're helping make connections with folks in Ireland. Who's got the last question here? Who's got that?
You're actually helping people in your community feel heard. Coming across borders to do business here, that connection you just made about the work you did with deaf students is very profound, that you're helping, you help them be seen and heard, and now you're doing that for companies. Good for you. Your grandmother must be very proud.
Thank you.
Yeah, wow. So do you get letters of thanks, and do people stay in touch with you over the years?
I do.
Mm-hmm. That must feel pretty good. What's the website address for your organization, Bill?
mclandm.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Bill McLaughlin, President of McLaughlin & Morgan, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Jeff, can you give us a rundown on who else we've had the opportunity of speaking with today?
Sure, Herb. Happy to. It's a very special show today. Kevin Burns, Executive Director, Action Wellness. Ken Wong, President, CIG Asia. Dan Tropiano, CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware, with his mother, Adeline, as well as Bill McLaughlin, President, McLaughlin & Morgan.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, Mr. Jeff Mack, Newmark Knight Frank, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Ethan Milrod, GoTo, Lou Bridell, Morgan Lewis, Patrick Riley, Bartlett Group, and Paul Pomeroy, ABNC Creative, as well as Christine Miles, CI Squared, and Hank Boyer, Boyer Management, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. They'll be providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. Let's run through some websites real quickly. Kevin Burns, the website of Action Wellness is? Real quick. Actionwellness.org.
Yes.
Let's see. Ken Wong, President of CIG Asia, the website address. CIGAsia.com. All right. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executives. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.